honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by the U.S. Army. Find your place on the Army team at goarmy.com/warriors.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. In a week, we mark the 75th anniversary of multiple World War II battles. One of them, the bloody fight for Peleliu in the Palau Group in the Northern Pacific. With the 81st Infantry Division there was a young man named Francis Cowles.
Yeah, on Peleliu, why, the Marines, like you said, were the ones that had the object of taking the island and more or less trying to secure it, you know. And, of course, if you looked on the island itself when we got there, of course, a lot of the battlements were disposed of, and you know, through the Marine Corps. And they had what they call Radar Hill, which had radio-controlled howitzers that protected the island from ships and stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And then if you'd have seen them... all that armament that they had there, they were well protected. And plus the fact that that island had been mining by the Germans for fertilizer before World War I. And the Japanese got that for their participation in securing World War I, you know. So they were given that island. And on that island, it was just a mine island of hills. They weren't what I call mountains, but they were hilly. It was all hilly, and it was all limestone. And they were 3 and 4 stories deep that they had time to prepare those emplacements and stuff. You could actually hear them through the limestone, you know, that was
the in tunnels. The
tunnels. You could actually hear them. And it was kind of scary. You didn't know when they were going to come out, you know. And they had it all lined up so that they had good fields of fire, you know, to protect their interests. And the worst part was Bloody Nose Ridge, you know, which it was a hill that had a big tree on right at the tip of it. And the bombing and everything tried to dig it out, but it was a hollow tree, and it was an observation point for the enemy to see all our movements and stuff and concentrate the fire, you know, on anybody that was trying to take the hills. And so they would let you get into the clearings. There was the other tree on the hill. Just if you wanted to take it a forward position, why, you just had a clear feel of having to run up that hill. But when you got up to a certain point, they opened fire. They had it all crossed
by. There wasn't a whole lot to hide behind.
There was nothing. Nothing, nothing, nothing. No rocks or nothing.
And just to put a little perspective on it for our listeners, the Japanese, as far as anyone can tell looking back, the Japanese had approximately 11,000 men on the island to start with. 10,695 of those 11,000 were killed. On the American side, the Marines sent over 17,000. There are about 11,000 from the 81st Infantry Division. Between the Marines and the Army, almost 10,000 were either wounded or killed. Almost 10,000 casualties, with just under 1,800 killed. You were one of more than 8,000 to be wounded. Tell us the story of the day when you were wounded and how that came about. You described for us that there wasn't anything to hide behind. I imagine that was the case on that day.
Well, the thing of it was, they tried to take this observation point out, and they could overrun it, but they could not succeed in holding them down because it was all, in other words, where they had caverns underneath. And they did take it out, but a lot of times, but then they'd move over it, but they would go back into them because they were all interconnected by caves. They tried to take that, well, every day. They made an assault on that position.
Had you been there before, or was this the first time for you?
Well, it was the first time for me. And then when it come our turn to take it, we got the orders from the General Holland Smith, who was on a battleship out in the Pacific there, and he was in charge of the Marine Corps for the operation of the island there, but the Army was to back him up, you know.
Right, right.
So they put out the order that they had to take it at all costs, you know. So every day they put a new regiment in there to try and take that position. That's why there were so many casualties.
What you said just struck me. When they say, we need to take it at all costs, and you hear that, you say, wait a second, I might be the cost.
You go, yes, that's for sure.
Well,
and I didn't intend to be the cost. Everybody that tried to take that position didn't come back, you know. Well, the lieutenant came, and he just come up to me, and he says, Cowles, are you yellow? And I says, no, sir, I'm just saying my prayers. And as I said that, he got shot in the mouth.
Mm.
And I don't know the end results of that, but anyway, they wiped out the rest of the squad, you know, that was on the hillside. And then the company commander and the first sergeant, they were in their tent and they had a critique, and they, it was, I didn't know why they had a critique, but anyway, he wanted to appoint me as a squad leader for another squad to take up the next day.
Well, and one of the reasons for that was you're the only one left. 12 guys went out, the other 11 were killed?
Yeah, but he gave me another squad.
How did you survive that? How did you escape when the other 11 guys were killed?
Well, because I they opened fire just as I was talking to the lieutenant.
Right.
And that ended the
They picked them all off at that moment.
Yes.
But because you were behind the rock.
Well, I was standing there talking to the lieutenant, you know.
Right, right.
And he got shot in the mouth, through the mouth, you know. And that ended the conversation and everything. I don't know whether he got killed or not. But anyway, that about an hour later, I was notified to report to the captain's tent, you know. They wanted a critique on this here.
Right. So that had been unsuccessful. You're the only one unharmed from that squad. They give you a new squad, you and 11 other guys, and say, tomorrow, you need to take this position. But this is something that's a little bit rare in the Army. They gave you some input here. They let you tell them how you thought you could take this point.
Well, no, I told them that I would not take it and follow their orders. I would take it under my terms. Instead of taking a frontal assault on a hill, we were going to go take it by the crest of the hill,
mm-hmm.
where I would have protection from the gunfire, because it'd either go over my head or hit into the side of the hill. I was safe, you know, unless I exposed myself beyond the rocks, you know.
Because I guess first they said, we want you to take it, and you go the same way that they've been going, and you said,
yeah,
no, I'm not going to do that?
That's right. That's what I told them.
Because you felt you'd just be leading these soldiers into their deaths.
That's what I told them. I didn't figure out if they wanted to be a goat to lead sleepless slaughter. A lot of times I had talked to the commander, you know, when they asked for volunteers, and nobody would take the volunteers, and then he would give me the volunteer job, but then he would give me permission to do it the way I thought I could do it, not the way that the Army says you had to do it. We'll have a satchel charge, which we can drop down into this observation point there, and so that they can't get up there to give directions to the their troops. And that's what we did. They had to have a little time to crawl back up, you know, because they were down undercover there so that they wouldn't get wounded, you know, from the artillery shells and everything that they were using to try and penetrate that observation point.
So the long and short of it is, your plan worked.
It
would,
did.
Would you say that you caught the Japanese by surprise, that they were unprepared for?
Well, in other words, how many times did they try it? We were doing the same thing every day.
So they
never were expecting anything different. Mm-hmm.
So you caught them by surprise. You dropped the charges down this hollowed out tree on top of the hill. That's their observation post.
They didn't have no observation anymore. See.
So you had taken that position.
Yes, but I says, we ain't going to hold this very easy. You know, I said, they're going to get this tonight. That was the only thing they had left.
Yeah, this is getting on. That battle had started September 15th, so you're more than a month after it began, October 23rd. But I understand that night.
They come, you know, about 2 o'clock in the morning to try and retake the position. But because of the loose rock, which they was on the side of the hill, which they hollowed out from the caves, was loose. And anybody stepping on that would slide a little bit, and you'd hear them coming, you know.
So that's what woke you up at 2 in the morning?
Yeah.
Or gunfire?
Well, no, that's what woke me up. And then they called for flares. They lit the flares up, and then from here, a little further than the door away from me, was this Japanese standing by a tree, just froze.
It's about 20 feet away.
Yeah.
So that the sky lights up and you see a Japanese soldier 20 feet away.
Yeah, but he froze. Mm-hmm. They were told not to move when you have light because you're a target then.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to give away my position where I was hid, you know, because I had a rocked embankment around my position. I figured if I missed him, he'd know where I was. I didn't want him to let him know where my position was, so I didn't fire while the flare was up. I was waiting for the flare to dim down and go down, and then at that moment I would fire. And I fired, and he just disappeared down the hill. Then all hell broke loose with rocket or 4.2 millimeter mortars. One of the boys had called for assistance because of the Japs trying to take over the position.
Right.
And some of the mortar shells exploded up in the air. And I had an old grenade box it was made of oak wood. It took two people to carry, you know, with these grenades. And I just put it over my chest, you know, to protect myself. And the minute I got it over there, that old shrapnel just stuck into that wood there.
And so you knew that these shells were coming.
You couldn't help it because they were exploding above the ground, and the shrapnel was just going all over.
So you said to yourself, I've got to get something to protect myself. You grab this grenade box, throw it over your chest, and all of a sudden, rat-a-tat-tat.
Yeah, yeah. Then that's when I got wounded. And then
where did it get you?
It got me in the hands. I was holding it, you know.
But if you didn't have that grenade box, it would have gotten your hands and your heart and everything else.
So anyway, the company commander, he called up there, and he says, do you need a medic, you know? And I says, don't send anybody up. I says, it's hell up here, you know. I says, I'll make it through, you know, till morning, you know, and then I'll go down and get
treated. So you got patched up the next morning?
Yeah.
You ever think about what would have happened if that grenade box wasn't there?
I don't know why. See, we carried that thing up there. That was what we were using for dropping down. After the satchel charges went off, then we were using grenades to drop it on every few minutes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Good thing you took it up there.
Sure it was.
Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting here talking to me.
That's right.
And in fact, that same area, Bloody Nose Ridge, which had given you some bloody fingers, but not taken your life, you'd be asked to go reinforce and take over. You had the position. The Americans had the position. You think there's not a whole lot to worry about. You're just going up the hill to take over for the guys who are there. But that's not exactly how it happened. Tell us about this day when something caught your eye on the way up Bloody Nose Ridge.
Well, like in the service, they always relieved the troops, you know, so that they could get away from the action. And there wasn't any particular thing to fear because I figured we had taken the opposition out, and I was just going up the hill the normal way that they were making all these frontal assaults. And as I was going up there, I was in the cross position just in case that things were... Well, I always walk when a crowd's going uphill in a way, you know.
Well, especially when you describe this island, like so many islands in the Pacific, a network of tunnels, you never know where they're hiding, so...
Yeah. So, anyway, as I was walking up, I happened to spot a shiny object that took my eye, you know, and I thought, well, I bent down to pick it up, and just as I bent down to pick it up, the machine gun opened fire, you know. So I stayed down and crawled the rest of the way, you know, so that I wouldn't be hit. And I was just lucky to have spotted that item. I don't know how it got there.
So Abe Lincoln saved your life.
Yeah, you might say so. I just figured the good Lord took care of me many, many, many times, because I had grenades go roll right at my feet and not go off. I had rifle shells take my helmet off of my head, you know, but not scar me. I was just blessed.
And we're blessed to have known men like Francis Cowles, who shed their blood on our behalf. There's a lot we've covered today, and I have a ton of links for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Next week, we'll be back to our formula of one veteran for the whole hour, but I hope you enjoyed this multi-pronged approach today. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by the U.S. Army, building a new generation of leaders at goarmy.com/warriors.